or of Lake Effect Now, I'm Mitch Teich. Many of us grew up idolizing superheroes, and some of us might still idolize superheroes. But for writers Paul McComas and Greg Starrett, it was the characters that populated Universal Pictures' creature features of the 1930s and 40s that caught their imaginations. From Wolfman to Frankenstein's monster, the pair found a kinship with these anti-heroes and with each other. After a young Greg joined a young Paul's Lon Chaney Jr. fan club, the pen pals turned into lifelong friends. Decades later, the pair have joined forces to pay tribute to the films that entertained them for so long. But they also set out to fix a small logistical flaw in a Frankenstein flick that only the most ardent fans would have noticed. How did Frankenstein get his fancy new suit? The answer is found in the duo's new novella, Fit for a Frankenstein, a tale about a tailor's chance encounter with a monster and his buddy Igor. McComas joined Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce in studio, with Starrett joining them by phone from Munster, Indiana, and McComas explains why he first fell in love with these original genre films.
The beautiful black and white cinematography, you know, this is where we get the term silver screen, and those movies from the 30s and 40s had all these shades of gray and some of them really luminous. Many of these films were made in part by German expatriates who had left as the Reich was taking power and came to Hollywood and did amazing work within genre movies of the 30s and 40s. The actors, you know, people like Boris Karloff, Colin Clive, Elsa Lancaster, Bela Lugosi, who, you know, we sort of star him in his portrayal of Igor in our novella. And, you know, it's easy to look back on these movies and say that they were cheesy or they were this or that and kind of reduce them. But I think that there's a magic to them that has been there for decades and decades since the people making them brought them to light.
And what about you, Greg?
You know, some kids were into superheroes, and monsters just seemed like kind of those things to me when I was a kid. The Frankenstein monster in particular, you know, strong, indestructible, and just he had, I mean, basically they had superpowers, these monsters, the Wolfman, Dracula. And, you know, all the things Paul said certainly apply as well. They're beautifully made movies. They're beautiful looking, great scores. But as a kid, I think it was akin to being the superhero thing with these monsters had superpowers. And I wasn't afraid of them. I felt a kinship to them and thought of them as like heroes kind of a thing. Universal always made the monsters, they weren't just these unfeeling, killing monsters. There was always a sympathy right. level there that appealed to me as a kid.
Right. They were wounded in some way. The monster was terribly sad and lonely and rejected by everyone whose path he crossed. And that's part of the reason why he turned out murderous. The Wolfman had this other side, the tormented, accidental killer. You know, he didn't ask for that curse. In fact, it came to him as a result of a good deed. He tried to defend someone and he got bit. So I think Greg has put his finger on something kind of key here. We weren't able to relate to the comic book superheroes in the way that we were able to relate to these characters that had a definite dark side, but also a significant sympathetic quality.
So what then inspired you both, so many years after being first bitten by the genre bug, if you will, what inspired you then to take on writing your own Frankenstein tale?
I noticed this bizarre little costume continuity issue in the fourth Frankenstein film, The Ghost of Frankenstein, and the devil's advocate in me said, well, maybe that's something that should be addressed all these years later. Not that anyone really cares, but it might be fun to go there and explain, why is it that the monster is caked in dried sulfur in one scene? We fade out, we fade in, and he's clean, wearing another suit, and maybe 40 or 50 kilometers away. How did that happen? And then immediately I thought, well, this is a story that that Greg and I need to tell together if he's up for it. And so I tendered that invitation, and maybe Greg can pick it up there.
Yeah, and I was excited. I had this was my first time writing something with Paul, and we had worked on a lot of other projects together, but never a writing project like this. And so I was excited when he offered me the chance to co-write the story. And it was originally going to be a short story, mm-hmm. but it just kept growing and growing and taking on more of a life of its own. So
it broke out of the straps on the table and began lumbering forward and growing larger and larger. We had a monster on our hands, and how did we write it? Much the way that we're interacting right now, by phone and by email.
Yep.
He would write something and send it to me. I would kind of edit or tweak or polish it in some way and then add a little bit more and send it back to him. And he'd say, I liked it except for this part where you went too far. And I'd say, you're right. And I would bring it back. And so we would just sort of ping pong style trade segments of the story until we finally had this novella.
Now, there are four central characters in this novella. There's obviously Igor, spelled with a Y.
Yes.
There's the Frankenstein monster.
Yes.
There is Klaus, a tailor, and his young buxom daughter, Gretel.
Yeah.
Who did you base these characters on, and where did they come from in the Frankenstein canon?
Well, really, only two of them came directly from the canon, right?
Right.
The monster and Igor. Igor shows up in the third movie and kind of steals the show. The son of Frankenstein. And then he comes back for the fourth film, at the end of which his brain is transplanted into the monster's body. So technically, from that point on, the monster and Igor are one and the same, although the series kind of pretends that never happened at some point. So those two characters were well established for us by the movies that we had seen. Then Greg came up with the name Klaus Hauptschmidt, which seemed perfect for this immaculate, kind of anal-retentive tailor. And I imagined him as being played by David Hyde Pierce, who played Niles on the TV show Frasier. Because who are we going to force to lock horns with Igor? His opposite. And so this guy is as kind of effete and fastidious as Igor is shaggy and scary. And it was great fun putting the two of them together and writing about their interaction. And then Gretel, she's kind of an archetypal Bavarian lass. There is a character very similar to her in The Ghost of Frankenstein, and we ended up turning the two of them into cousins. But Gretel is, I suppose, the love interest or the cheesecake in the story. There's got to be some at some point.
One thing I would mention is Paul and I talked about who we envisioned as the tailor, and we were originally kind of looking back at actors of the period of the 30s and 40s, and not really finding any. Paul kind of came up with the idea of David Hyde Pierce, and it was a good idea, but we weren't going there originally.
Right.
It was sort of it came to Paul.
And Gretel became more significant, I think, as we went on. I think she started as that archetype or even a stereotype, but by the end, we actually had some excerpts from her point of view, and I really like her. She's pretty brave. When her father's being menaced by the Frankenstein monster and orders her to run out, she runs toward him instead. He's kneeling on the floor, and she kneels with him in order to try and help him. So she may be cheesecake, but she's cheesecake with nerve.
Now, obviously, the story centers around, as you mentioned, Paul, filling in that gap of how the monster got this brand new suit, and he and Igor have traveled from one place to another.
One fictitious Bavarian town to another, yeah.
And so that's where this tailor comes in, who is pretty much ordered to make this monstrous suit for
yes.
the monster. But along the way, along this journey, it's almost like a buddy tale between Igor and the monster. Tell me a little bit about what you based this friendship on.
And I'm glad you noticed that. And some of the reviews, we've had some real nice reviews over the past week, have noticed that despite its zaniness, there's this kind of wrenchingly sweet relationship between two of the principal characters. And it was present. It was present in the two movies in which they appear together, the son of Frankenstein and the ghost of Frankenstein. And then in some backstory in our novella, we see the moment where they met. This was never dramatized in the Universal films. It was kind of neat to be able to go back and do justice to Igor's backstory and how he met the monster. And the scene that Greg wrote for that was indeed wrenchingly sweet, where Igor could well die at any moment if not for the monster bringing some water to him and saying, friend, good. Greg, you want to pick it up?
Well, I'll say one thing. The third film in the series, Son of Frankenstein, it's the first film that the Igor character appears in. And there is a scene towards the end of the film where Wolf Frankenstein, the son of the original Dr. Henry Frankenstein, shoots Igor, puts a few bullets in him, and we believe he's dead. When the monster finds the dead Igor, his friend, he lets out this horrible wail of despair.
Yeah.
And that, to me, really summed up their relationship. I mean, it was a dear friends, the two of them. And I really wanted to capture that in this novella.
And one of the paradoxes is we can do that. We can talk about this sweet friendship and relationship between two characters who are, at the end of the day, both pathological killers, you know, but to make them relatable, as the films did to some extent, and get inside their minds. Each of them is a point of view character in the novel, principally Igor. He's the main one. But we do go into the monster's mind from time to time, too, what there is of it, and into Klaus's a fair amount, and occasionally into Gretel's. So it's sort of a chamber play, and we've got these four principal characters, and we let them take turns guiding the reader through.
Now, I don't want to give away the ending or how anything gets resolved, but the ending does leave an option for more stories of Igor and the monster on the road to be told. Do you both hope to write more novellas along this line?
See, I think the ending leads directly to the fade-in partway through Ghost of Frankenstein, because now we've explained where the suit came from. We've gotten him cleaned up, and we've gotten him to the town of Visaria. But there has been some talk on Greg's and my part about shifting to a different franchise. Do you want to mention that, Greg?
Yeah. Because I do feel we kind of wrapped up the gap in the Frankenstein monster series there. But there are some gaps. There's one particular in one of the Mummy films, the Universal Mummy films. There's one in one of the Wolfman franchise. So there are other places to go, and we have discussed a little bit of that.
Specifically, Greg has mentioned maybe the Mummy's cruise, since we have to somehow get the mummy during the third film in the Mummy series from Egypt to Maplewood, USA.
Mapleton,
yeah. Thank you. Mapleton, USA. And that boat ride, if we tackle that, I think it's going to be one hell of a ride.
Well, as we talked about, this is in many ways a story about this deep friendship between Frankenstein's monster and Igor. And I wonder how your own friendship influenced the one that we see characterized in this novella.
Did you see the author's photo on the back of the book? Well, and for the readers, and of course, this is great on radio, so I'll hold this up. Greg and I costumed and made up as respectively Igor and the monster. Greg and I are the same height. We're both 6'2", but I'm standing on a box, okay, so that I will loom over him in the shot. And Greg did the makeup for this picture. It's a wonderful black and white, one-of-a-kind author's photo. And I think what we were getting at by doing that for our author's photo was drawing a parallel, not to say that one of us is the big dumb one and the other of us is the insidious, evil, murderous one. We're both, right, Greg?
Right. I would say that, yeah. I mean, well, we can certainly appreciate a good friendship because we appreciate the friendship of Igor and the monster, and we've had our own long-running friendship for going, almost 40 years.
Almost, yeah. So what a fitting thing for us to put at the core of a narrative that we, as two longtime friends, are writing together, a novel about a friendship.
Well, let me say, Greg Starrett and Paul McComas, thank you both so much for coming in and telling us about Fit for a Frankenstein.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you for having us.
A pleasure.
Milwaukee native Paul McComas and Greg Starrett are the authors of the new novella, Fit for a Frankenstein, published by Walkabout Publishing. Starrett is the founder of a company that produces old-time radio shows and an occasional guest host and voiceover man for a radio station in Indiana. He's a telecommunications technician as well, and this is his literary debut. McComas is the award-winning author of two novels and two short story collections. His next novel, Logan's Journey, is co-authored with Logan's Run, author William F. Nolan, and it's set to be released next year. McComas will appear at Boswell Book Company tonight, reading from the book as part of 40s Film Night with Dave Lurson. Today is publication day for a Wauwatosa writer. We'll chat with Andrea Locken about her novel, The Repeat Year, when Lake Effect continues after a break.